y'all. Welcome to class. This is White Homework, a podcast about race, racism, and restorative justice. I'm your host, Tori Williams Douglas. I'm a writer, a speaker, an educator, and the creator of White Homework, which is an anti-racism course that you can do at home on your own time if you are trying to be less racist, which if you're listening to this, I'm just going to say that you are, whether you want to or not. I have an amazing guest on the show today because I wanted to talk about race and homeschooling in the United States. So I invited Jessica Delaney, who is the communications director for the Coalition for Responsible Home Education. And this organization does a lot of really cool work, and I'll let Jessica get into that a little bit. But I really appreciate the fact that they essentially exist to look out for kids like me who were basically like prevented from getting an actual education, you know, because in my case, it was like the person who was teaching me was racist. So it was weird. Anyway, Jessica, thanks for coming on.
Tori, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah. So let's see, what should we do first here? Do you want to talk a little bit about, because you were homeschooled?
Yes, I was, K through 12, just like you.
Yeah, same. Do you want to talk just a little bit about what that was like?
Sure. So yeah, I was homeschooled K through 12, myself as well as my siblings. We were in a state with fairly minimal regulations. It's Mississippi. So pretty much the only requirement is that you have to do an annual notification where you go to the school district and say, hey, I'm homeschooling kids X, Y, and Z this year. And they're like, okay, thumbs up, you're good to go. But other than that, there were no subject requirements. And some states have what's known colloquially as the Tebow Law, which is named after Tim Tebow, the former University of Florida quarterback, big SEC athletic superstar. He was allowed to play public school sports because the state of Florida had that law that allowed homeschool students to enjoy public school extracurriculars. So Mississippi is not one of those states, as are many other states in the U.S. So those opportunities were not available to me. So my homeschooling experience looked like when I was younger, my parents were very dialed in, very engaged, a lot of one-on-one time. We always had tons of books in the house, and it was an exciting time. We had, you know, colorful flashcards everywhere. We were singing songs, drawing pictures on the whiteboard. And then once I got to be a bit older, I started to experience something which is very common for homeschool children once they reach a certain age, which is that now that your parents have younger children to tend to more, you kind of are forced to be more independent with your education. So I started to take the reins more and more. I would, you know, kind of determine, okay, this is what I need to do today. These are my assignments. I was pretty self-contained. By the time I was 8 or 9 years old, I had my books, I had my notebooks, I had my whole color-coded situation going. I have many of my old homework assignments now, and if I flip through them, it's like everything is full of gel pen. I was like, I put so much effort into this. Like, all my assignments are color-coded. It's a lot. And then by the time I got to be even older, it got to the point where I was making up assignments for myself. I was very hands-on about selecting my own curriculum. You know, it was very much a self-driven educational experience. And there are pros and cons to that. I happen to have been the type of student who was very self-motivated, who had a high degree of reading comprehension. And so in a lot of ways, I was more equipped to do that by myself than maybe other children were. And I witnessed other children who didn't have that innate sense of, okay, I'm just going to get up and go after it. Or, you know, I'm able to make these decisions and create these assignments and handle them myself. I saw them not being able to do that, which it's not realistic to expect all children to be able to be like these self-contained teachers. So definitely a mixed bag in terms of that. But, you know, I was able to get to college. College was something that was always emphasized in my house as being incredibly important. It was always something that we knew we were going to do. We were pushed towards it. You know, PSAT, SAT, ACT, all those sorts of things were regular kitchen table discussions. And I did make it out. But the reason why I'm into homeschool reform and homeschool activism is because I know and know of too many stories of homeschooled children who didn't get the kinds of opportunities that I had, who didn't get the kind of education that allowed them to pursue college if they were interested in doing it. The kind of education where they're having trouble, you know, filling out a form online or doing basic mathematics to create a budget, just completely educationally neglected in every way. And that's not even going into the issues of physical abuse and neglect, social isolation, so many other issues that kind of, they're not unique necessarily to homeschool children, but they can be exacerbated because of the nature of the practice. So that's kind of the background there.
Yeah. I very much hear you on that. I don't even know, honestly, like how much I have talked about on this particular show, like my own homeschool experience. I feel like I have talked about it maybe a little bit more on my other podcast. But yeah, I had a fairly similar experience. You know, my mom taught all of us, all five of us, K through 12. And, you know, with, I definitely got the most attention, right? It was like,
as the eldest sibling.
Yeah, absolutely. And there was never a time when, we had to like choose our own curriculum or anything like that. Like my mom is very much a drill sergeant. She is, I'm going to get real corny for a second, so please forgive me, but my mom is a Leo who is like stacked with Virgo placements, and that is exactly how she behaves. Like she's very prideful, like an unhealthy Leo. She's got a lot of pride and she is like organized as fuck. And so, yeah, there was a lot of like, I have ADHD, so keeping me on task was, a job, but I got, like I said, I got the most attention of all of my siblings, in terms of education. And this isn't even something that like my siblings and I have talked about a huge amount. Like I'm really tight with them. And yeah, it's kind of recently just come up. One of my sisters, just got a new job that required a lot of testing essentially. And so she like jumps into the group chat a couple weeks ago and she's just like, I am at such a disadvantage because I was not allowed to attend school. And she was just talking, you know, she went on for quite a while about how she felt like it was like holding her back, right, in her career choice. And so I was kind of, you know, because this is part of my job is like talking about my story. So I'm like, I feel like I've shared this like a million times. So I just kind of want to listen to my siblings and like what their experiences were. And it was all, you know, it was all pretty much the same, but like, yeah. So I'm the oldest of five. And by the time there was just like less and less attention paid, I think, as time went on. Mm-hmm. Which, I mean, if you think about it, like you are not, like, if you're not a teacher, you're not being paid. Like you're doing this work out of like racial resentment and like religious fanaticism. Yeah, I'm like, I've been trying to think, I'm like, I don't know how many years that was, but it was like, it was 20 years, I guess, of
it's
teaching.
It's a long time.
It's a long time. And yeah, it's just, it's interesting because it's like, yeah, they kind of start to like check out a little bit and then there's nobody checking
in. Pick up the slack. Right.
Yeah.
It's a form of burnout. It's definitely a form of burnout. And it's something that is widely discussed amongst homeschooling parents communities. You know, you see them encouraging each other saying, hey, you know, we know it's hard, we know it's tough, cut yourself some slack or what have you. Homeschooling, it's like, it's an educational option. And so what it offers children and their families, it can offer them flexibility, it can offer them resources or support that maybe they couldn't get in the traditional school system for whatever reason. Obviously, there's some issues where the current state of the law is honestly not sufficient to make sure that children like you and I don't fall through the cracks in some way. So what we advocate for at CRAG are common sense, reasonable policies to make sure that homeschool children are safe and getting a quality education at home. These doors are being opened for them and not slammed in their faces. And what we also do is we create a lot of resources to help these children and their parents have the best possible experiences. So we know that, you know, it's tiring. It is a lot of work to be a child's teacher, to be essentially functioning as a replacement for an entire school's ecosystem. So we try to create as many resources as we can just to give these parents the tools that they need to give their children the best possible experience when they're in that situation.
Yeah. Yeah. I recently did a thread that was like subtweeting somebody who, so here's my deal with homeschool Twitter, and people come after me all the time. And I don't care. I think homeschooling can be like a valid option if safety is an issue, for example. Yeah. I emotional safety and physical safety, like both of those things are completely valid. But, I grew up in Oregon, and you're supposed to test in like, I think it's 3rd, 5th, 8th, and 10th grade. So you're supposed to come in and do a state test that's like administered, and that information like goes to the state. And, so we did that 1 year. And then my mom was like, well, I don't want to do it. So if somebody shows up and is just like, and, you know, knocks on the door and is like, hey, why aren't you testing? I'm just going to tell them like, oh, I didn't know I was supposed to. Okay. Yeah. Cool. That's how that's supposed to work. and I think that basically what I was like, the thing that I was trying to say in this thread was like, the reason that homeschooling exists the way that it does, the way it's, that it, there's no, legally, there's like no structure whatsoever. It's just like, whoever happens to be, you know, making the laws that day, it like, there's no consistency to it at all. A lot of states, it like educational neglect is completely legal. And I'm like, I'm tying all of this stuff like back to racism. It makes my skin crawl because I hear people, progressive homeschool families, people who aren't homeschooling for religious reasons, but have other reasons. Unschoolers and all of these folks, when they use the same arguments that like the people who are arguing, like, we have the right to like marry our daughters off at like 15, 16, 17 years old. And you can't make us educate our children at all. That's at the end. When you're using those people's arguments, I'm like, I have a problem with you. And like, I don't think that you should be homeschooling because you don't understand like the propaganda that you are spewing right now. And you clearly don't have a grasp on like why it is important to protect children's rights. Cause I think children have a right to an education. Sorry, I do. So yeah, it really makes my skin crawl when they start pulling out these like fundamentalist, like, Christianist arguments, that like the state can't have any influence on my children. Oh my God. So like, this is just a thing that I feel strongly about, but like, yeah, all of these arguments that I hear, from people who claim to not be religious or associated with like that world at all, it's like all the same arguments. I'm like, you're arguing against protecting children from abuse. So no, you're wrong.
Right. And a lot of people don't recognize the origins of the arguments that they are propagating, just because, homeschooling has experienced some growth over the past few years. You know, there's two main things that are kind of spearheading the growth that we're seeing in the 2010s and then especially on into the 2020s. So the two trends are, first of all, there's a growing number of families who are doing it for individual pragmatic reasons instead of more religious or educational reasons, you know, just for, you know, debating different types of educational theories or what have you. I actually discussed this last year with Sojourners Magazine. So there are a lot of people who are doing it because say their children are Black and they are being mistreated by the public school system. Their teachers are racist. It's a hostile environment. You know, they're being mistreated by administrators. It's just a hostile environment for them. So it's understandable that they would want to remove their children from that environment. Children whose families are part of the LGBT community, and they're hearing things in the classroom that are dismissing their identities, dismissing their lives and the value of their families. Obviously, that's not a safe situation for them. So it's totally understandable that you would seek an alternate solution. And for those families, people in those types of situations, homeschooling can be a great solution. But it's important as more and more folks from different walks of life start to take a look at homeschooling, consider it as an option, adopt it, that they understand the history of it and a lot of the cultures that have kind of gotten homeschooling to where they are today. And then the second thing, I didn't mention it, but the second thing is obviously pandemic homeschooling. And I could go off on a tangent about how homeschooling has kind of become this term that people bat around, and we're kind of losing some of the distinctions of what it means to be homeschooled. Because if your child is enrolled in a public school and they're at home doing classes on their computer, that's not exactly what we mean by homeschooling. So that's one of the things that makes it difficult to kind of track, okay, who's actually being homeschooled, who's not, because folks are using one term in a variety of ways where it's like, you gotta be a little bit more specific in order to make this meaningful. But as far as the history of homeschooling goes, it's kind of interesting how it has changed hands over the years. You can kind of track from the 70s to the 80s, 90s, on into present day, how we've kind of gotten to this point. So back in the 70s, the modern movement kind of started with an educational theorist and school reform supporter named John Holt. And his argument was that the formal schools focus on rote learning and kind of oppressive classroom environments. Those things were designed to turn children into like compliant employees and not individuals. And so the things he was advocating for kind of is what we call unschooling today. So it's like a very similar type of thing. So at that point in the 70s, it was legal to educate children at home in every state, but the regulations varied. Some of them are kind of stringent. There were 6 states at that time, for example, that required parents to have teaching licenses. Can you imagine that?
Totally
different scenario today. So at that point, one of John Holt's peers, one of his colleagues in like the educational theory space, his name was Raymond Moore. He said that most local public schools and administrators and teachers were fairly understanding, and there weren't a lot of conflicts between those two communities. And the homeschoolers who did have some sort of a challenge could turn to organizations created by Moore and Holt to kind of mediate with local officials and get aid. So that was the 70s. And then by the time we get to the 1980s, something has shifted. This was a point when the direction of the homeschooling movement kind of changed. And a new wave of individuals entered it. And these were the evangelical and fundamentalist Christians. And those individuals were engaging in the kind of culture wars rhetoric about public schools that kind of declared them all as godless and moral institutions that were leading the youth of the nation to moral peril. So that's where that ideology kind of sprang from. They gained a lot of credibility from institutions like the Focus on the Family. And that's when they started taking a more antagonistic approach towards public schools. They didn't want to work with them. They didn't want to collaborate with them. And that's kind of when the legal battles over homeschooling began in earnest. So homeschoolers found themselves faced with local public school officials that they weren't willing to cooperate with. And then there was just like some negative back and forth there. And so this is when homeschooling kind of went from being addressed at the local level to the state level. And so state by state, homeschoolers are petitioning their legislators to change laws to accommodate homeschooling. And so that's why homeschool law is so different across the country. There are no federal laws regulating homeschooling. It was all done first at local levels and then moved up to state level. So it's a different story. It's a different look for every single state. You will not find 2 states who have an identical setup in terms of how they address homeschooling. Some states have no oversight at all, while some have a handful of requirements. And so this is the 80s. And by the time we get to 1983, the HSLDA is introduced. And they really make a name for themselves by the 1990s. And what they do is, that's the Homeschool Legal Defense Association. And what they do is they lobby for laws to ultimately reduce homeschooling oversight. It doesn't take long for them to sort of take over the homeschooling movement, which at that point had completely lost its more liberal-leaning educational reform flair. And at that point, it had a more evangelical kind of fundamentalist bent. And so the vision of HSLDA and the other new leaders of the movement, their ilk, what they wanted to do was homeschool children for pretty much the explicit purpose of creating a more theocratic type of environment in the United States. They wanted world changers, leaders in government, education, what have you, to have this particular ideology that they were selling and to go out and, you know, take over some things. And so that is why a lot of the homeschool curriculum that you see, a lot of the homeschool resources and rhetoric out there, a lot of it, if it's not a direct one-for-one beat of the sort of things that they were championing in the 80s and 90s, it's a remixed version of it. So that's kind of the backstory of how we get to present day. So we're in the present day. We're moved on from the 90s. We're in the 2010s, 2020s. So homeschooling has never looked more diverse than it does right now. There are record numbers of people across all these different demographics who are trying it for the first time. As I said, folks who are doing it for pragmatic reasons, individual pragmatic reasons instead of ideological reasons. You know, folks who realize their children aren't being served by the system for whatever reason, and they want to explore homeschooling's potential to create a better experience for their child. It was a really interesting moment in homeschool history. You know, the old guard of the 80s and 90s that created and sustained this movement based on a very specific conception of the world, they're still quite powerful, and their efforts to, you know, decrease children's rights have been largely successful. But homeschooling, it's really in a spot where it's more diverse than it's ever been, and more people are starting to explore its potential and navigate it differently. So I am optimistic about the future of homeschooling, but there's a lot of work to be done to raise awareness about the current legal state of it and raising awareness about the issues that are specific to homeschool children.
Absolutely. I was like kind of a product of the the hostile takeover of homeschooling by white evangelical people. And yeah, there was, it's funny because folks talk about stuff like this all the time. Like, we constantly are trying to tell people that it's like, no, these people seriously want to take over the government. And then folks are going and watching, like, I don't know, like the family docuseries on Netflix, and they're like, oh my God, did you know that, like, this is so wild. I'm like, this is my whole childhood. Like, what are you talking about? I've been trying to tell you this.
Yes, I was having a conversation along those lines with a friend not too long ago, and she was astonished. She was like, y'all were really living like that? I was like, yeah, we were. I was like, how are you not aware that this is a very widespread ideology within this country? You know, they're not playing around. They really have these very specific goals, and they're striving towards them, and they're making great strides. So just want folks to be aware, you know, homeschooling is not intrinsically a good or bad thing. It's an education option. But we want folks to understand that there is a history there. There is a history of it being used by many groups to isolate their children, to instill in them a very specific narrow ideology at the expense of valuing other folks' humanity or a right to exist. And so being cognizant of how that functions, if you're a homeschooling parent, if you're interested in homeschooling, you need to be aware of that culture and that history. And if that's something that you don't agree with, you need to be very vocal about it. You need to push back against it. There's so much potential to make homeschooling more inclusive, to make it more more open, more diverse, to make it better to serve the needs of children and their families. But it takes an awareness of where we have been in terms of the homeschool movement to create a good vision for where we can go.
There's like the white kind of progressive spaces have for the last several years been talking about, you know, school disparity, like public school disparities, right? And the way that, you know, affluent schools have all of this funding, and then there's these other schools that just like don't get much of anything. And kind of addressing the fact that it's like, once you put like a couple of white families in a school that's not doing super well, it tends to like get significantly better. And I'm like, so for me as someone who's like, spend your privilege, I think, if it's not like an issue of safety, I'm like, I don't understand why, you know. And this is the reason that like I send my kids to public school, is because like I can help more children be like volunteering in the school than I can, like my net positive influence on society is going to be greater if I'm like volunteering at this school versus like keeping my children at home with me all day. And I did expect to be like a homeschool parent. So, you know, I thought that was going to be really cool because it was like second generation. And now like interacting with some of those people is quite intolerable, distasteful to me now. Cause it's like, well, you don't know what you're talking about. I was like, well, actually I do. Cause I went through it. But yeah, I mean, I really think I don't know how seriously I actually say this, but I'm like, homeschooling kind of became the option for like white flight for people who could not afford like segregation academies, essentially. And I think that like, it's, you know, it was really like school integration that started this whole thing, right? Like that was the catalyst of like this white flight from public schools, that I think eventually kind of snowballed into what homeschooling is now. So yeah, it was like integration and then like taking prayer out of schools. I remember like we had Focus on the Family on the radio every single morning. And James Dobson going on and on and on about like, we've taken prayer out of schools. I'm like, buddy, that was like 25 years ago. What is your problem? And like the gay agenda, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. And it's really interesting, like the fundamentalist arguments. And I'm like, if you think that homeschooling is so great, and this is like a hill you're going to die on as a person with privilege, like you're a bad person if you were not advocating for oversight, because kids are being abused and neglected, and that's not okay. Like, I don't feel like I have to pull any punches there. Like, child abuse isn't cool. And, choosing to not educate your children, also like very not cool. And I, you know, for that's like, I understand having more options is good, but like, it's not that hard to advocate for kids to be protected in this system that was set up to keep kids from any sort of like government oversight at all. And so like the ways that sort of continues to play out in these conversations is, I don't love it, I guess. It's like, there are other ways that we could be doing things. And, you know, I do appreciate that there are more families of color who have that option. There are more queer families, who have that option. But I think in terms of like, how can we do the most to reduce harm, I really do think it's through the public school system, like on the whole. But yeah. I'm clearly a little bit biased, and so probably need to like work through some of that.
I totally get it. And, you know, this is something that is brought up as a counterpoint a lot when I talk publicly about, you know, homeschool children and the particular issues that they face. Folks will say, oh, well, we just need to, you know, focus on public school kids because most kids are public schooled anyway. Or, you know, public school kids also go through hard times. They can also be abused and neglected. I'm like, yes, all of that is true. And that's an incredibly important issue. I am all for any person who is genuinely trying to make a difference to improve any child's life, no matter where they're being educated. You know, the reason why I focus on homeschool children is because I was a homeschool child. Mm-hmm. And I am aware personally and then through my work, I'm aware of the unique issues that community faces. And I'm aware that it's an issue that's often overlooked or downplayed, but it's very important. And so that is why I do the work that I do. And to your point that, you know, there's an issue with oversight. There absolutely is an issue with oversight. At CRHE, we maintain a database of as many cases of child abuse and neglect that occur within a homeschooling environment. We've got hundreds and hundreds of cases listed on our website, and they are absolutely heartbreaking stories of children who are being kept in conditions that I believe any reasonable person would define as torture, because one of the big differences between a public school child who is being abused and a homeschool child that is being abused is that of a public school child has bruises or is clearly visibly malnourished, they are going to a facility where they are going to be surrounded by mandated reporters. And so there is a chance, there is an opportunity for a teacher or a staff member to look at that child and see that there is a problem and provide them with help. There is a chance that child has some hope if they have a situation at home. For a homeschooled child, there are generally no requirements for that child to ever have contact with a mandated reporter. So they may never see a doctor or a nurse or a counselor or a teacher or anyone else who's trained to spot issues and report them. You know, it's very conceivable, and it happens all the time. We have stories of this on our website of homeschooled children who don't leave the house. Maybe they see family every once in a while or go to the grocery store or go to church. Maybe they're even home church, but they have very little exposure to folks beyond the control of their own parents or caregivers who could spot a problem and step in. And so, like you said, that's absolutely not okay. Homeschooling should never be used as a tool to abuse children or neglect children or isolate them from community and family and help. And so that is why we are sounding the alarm on this. This is an issue that kind of flies under the radar just because of a variety of reasons. You know, the homeschool community, we're small in number compared to other educational options. A lot of times when you do hear about folks who are homeschooled, they are the Tim Tebows of the world. They have gone on to be wildly successful and, you know, they're doing incredible things. Or there's the stereotype of all of us being brainiacs or socially awkward or what have you. Most people aren't aware of all of the types of homeschooled people that there are. And there is a huge segment of our community that has fallen through the cracks in one way or another, whether it's because they were educationally neglected, they couldn't go on to get the GED or get a college degree, and their opportunities in terms of their career have been limited, or maybe they became stay-at-home daughters and they never had a chance to hear any other type of ideology or idea where it's like, hey girl, go out there and go get them, chase after your dreams. Here are some resources and help to go after them. So that's why at CRHE, we advocate for these really simple, common sense measures to make sure that children are actually receiving an education at home, that they have contact with a mandated reporter who can spot an issue if something is going on, requirements to make sure that they're on track or at least on par with their public school peers. So, you know, if you're in a public school in Mississippi and you're learning history, the homeschool child in Mississippi should also be learning history, just comparable subjects, record keeping. You know, if you're, you know, schools keep records. If you're a homeschool, you're a school, you need to keep records on your students. It shouldn't come down to, okay, you're about to quote unquote graduate and you're sitting around your computer looking at Microsoft Word trying to build your own transcript, which happened to me. So just really common sense measures like that, just to try to prevent some of these horror story cases from happening, and just create a baseline of protection and support so that homeschool children have a better chance of getting the things that they need.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for coming on. I really appreciate you sharing your expertise and taking the time out of your day. If you would like, would you like people to find you on the internet or elsewhere? And if so, where should they do that?
Sure. So first of all, please follow the Coalition for Responsible Home Education everywhere. We are on Facebook at Responsible Homeschooling, also on Instagram at Responsible Homeschooling, and then we're on Twitter at Responsible HS. And then if you want to keep up with me, I'm also on Twitter. I talk a lot about homeschooling, and then I will also give my opinions on Southern cuisine. I love fried foods here in the South. So if you want that kind of commentary, you can follow me on Twitter at Hullo Jess. So that's HulloJess.
Awesome. I love it. Thank you again. If you want to help us pay the rent for a family of color for a year, you should go to whitehomework.com and join Pay the Rent Club. This is the second year that we've been able to support a family and essentially provide them with like cash assistance for a year. So our families have been able to do things like go to the doctor and start therapy and have food in the fridge, not having to worry about taking public transportation or Uber if they need to go to the doctor. Like, they can actually afford to get their car fixed and take their own vehicle. So would love if you would go and sign up for that. That'd be really rad. You can also go to White Homework on Instagram, just at White Homework, and on Twitter as well. I'm also like running my mouth probably more often than I should at Tori Glass. So I think that is everything for this week. All right, I'll catch you all next week.